Welcome to this RCGP podcast on premature ovarian insufficiency. I'm Dr. Tony Hazel, a GP with an interest in women's health, and today I will be interviewing Dr. Anne Connolly. Anne is a gypsy in gynaecology and the RCGP Women's Health Champion. She is leading on the development of the Women's Health Toolkit, which includes relevant learning materials and resources to help primary care clinicians optimise the care provided, particularly for patients experiencing menstrual concerns. She is also chair of the Primary Care Women's Health Forum, which seeks to share best practice and provide training in women's health issues to those working in primary care. Thank you for your time today, Anne.
Hi, Tony. Thank you for doing this podcast.
So, in this podcast, we're going to be discussing the important concern of premature ovarian insufficiency, otherwise known as POI, and why this needs to be thought of as different to a normal menopause, and how it needs to be managed well by us in primary care. So, to start with, what is POI?
So, POI, as you say, is a premature ovarian insufficiency. We used to call it premature menopause, and then we got to call it premature ovarian failure, but now it's agreed that the proper terminology is premature ovarian insufficiency. And the definition of it is menopause that occurs before the age of 40. It affects approximately 1 in 100 women aged under 40 in the UK and 1 in 1,000 women aged under 30. So it's commoner than we think. And also we need to remember that 5% of women have an early menopause, which is classified as under the age of 45. Now, there are many differences that we'll talk through, but the difference with this than when we're talking about normal menopause is we need confirmation. So confirmation of this diagnosis is made with taking a follicle-stimulating hormone level, an FSH level. If somebody is having periods still, but menopausal symptoms, then you take that level on day 2 to 5 of their cycle, because you get a much more accurate result at that time. If they're not having periods, either because they've finished or they've had surgery, then you take the FSH level and you repeat it 6 weeks later. But what you're looking for is 2 levels above the level of 30 to make the diagnosis of POI.
And that's a key difference, isn't it? Because we wouldn't normally do a blood test in a woman who's going through a menopause at what we would consider to be a normal time. So why do some women have such an early menopause?
So POI can either be spontaneous, so it just happens, or it can be caused by surgery, or it can be caused by chemotherapy or other cancer treatments. In the majority of cases, however, there is no underlying cause, but it's really important to do the investigations to check. So if you've had somebody who's had surgery, so they've had a hysterectomy and they've had their ovaries taken away, and they've had that done all in one go, then they will go bang into a menopause. And therefore, we know that that's the cause of it. If they have had a hysterectomy, say for fibroids, and the ovaries have been left, then the average menopausal symptoms will start about 3 years after that surgery. And that's a bit confusing, isn't it? Because they haven't got periods, so they don't really know what else might be going on. But in the cases where it's spontaneous, we do need to be thinking about, is there other pathology going along, particularly in women who are much younger? And then we might need to be talking to specialists. It might be an endocrine person, or it might be a gynecologist, or it might be a menopause specialist, about what are the tests to do. We certainly need to be thinking, is it linked in with an autoimmune disease, so underactive thyroid, type 1 diabetes, Addison's disease? We do also need to be thinking about genetics, Fragile X syndrome, Turner's syndrome. So we need to be talking to someone about doing other tests, particularly in much younger women.
What are the main differences and the main problems that women with POI might face compared to those who are going through the menopause at a more usual time?
Great question. Firstly, it's often about a diagnostic confusion. So women 51, 50, they will know that that's the time of the menopause because that's the time of the menopause. But women who have menopausal symptoms much younger, they will often not understand what's happening to them for quite a while. They might think something else is going on, or when they present to us with, you know, we know there's a huge range of symptoms that women will get about around the time of the menopause. So some women it'll be palpitations, anxiety, myalgia, insomnia, you know, as well as the vasomotor symptoms. So firstly, there's that diagnostic confusion because it's not at the typical age. We also know that for some women, they may not have completed their families. We know that women are delaying the start of their families to do with jobs. So some women might have problems about the fact that they haven't actually completed their family, and they might have that sort of anxiety. If we're all about the same age and we're all going through the same symptoms at the same time and same issues at the same time, then it's much easier, isn't it? Whereas if you are significantly younger than all your mates and you're having these symptoms, there's a big psychological impact as well as an isolated feeling as well. So it is different for women who are younger when they have their menopause.
Absolutely. I can completely understand that you go through the same phases in life with your friends and then suddenly you're out of sync with them. So let's say you're seeing a woman with POI and you've confirmed your diagnosis with two FSH tests taken 6 to 8 weeks apart, and then she's come back for a further consultation. What are you going to cover, and does she definitely need a referral?
So firstly, we're going to do the holistic care approach that we always do with any woman. And it's about listening to the history that she gives us, listening to the symptoms, listening to what it is that specifically affects her, so we can do that personalised approach. Some women will want a specialist opinion. Some women will have researched and they understand and they're quite okay. So the needs of women are very different, as always. If there's any real diagnostic confusion or you're not sure which tests that you should have done or you can't access those tests, then referral is often very helpful, although it's difficult to know who to refer to because most of us don't have menopause specialists. So it might be a chat with your gynae team or your endocrinology team or even your genetics team to see what they would recommend. The DAISY network is a support network for women with POI, and that is really useful. Lots of good resources on there, which will offer women support and put them in contact with other people to talk to. So that's a great network. There's also concerns about fertility. So if she has not yet completed her family, then that might be a conversation with your local fertility team very early on, just to see if there's anything extra that could be offered in the way of support. Although often that's very difficult and too late. Then there are other issues about libido. We know that libido will reduce in some women around the time of a POI. So how can we support women with that? Is it psychosexual counselling? Is it thinking about asking somebody to see them who's a bit more expert in using, you know, testosterone therapy? Because that might be an option, although that we don't have anything licensed for that in the UK. And again, that's something that the specialist should be talking about. From us in primary care, though, if they've still got a uterus, we mustn't forget the need for contraception, because although we talk about fertility and we talk about libido being problems, actually 5% of women who have gone through POI may still ovulate. And we tell them they can't get pregnant, they don't need to use contraception, and then suddenly they're pregnant and they may or may not want that. So contraception, we must always remember that. And then finally, we need to be thinking about long-term disease prevention, because these women who go through POI, they are hypoestrogenic for 10, 15, 20 years longer. And we know that estrogen is very beneficial to us for our bones, and we know it's very beneficial to us for our hearts. So we need to be thinking about how are we going to support women over the long term if they've got an increased risk of osteoporosis or cardiovascular disease. And that's when we need to come into a conversation about HRT.
So yes, leading on to HRT, which is important, and we also have another podcast in the series on the menopause. So we're not going to revisit HRT in general, because that's covered in the other podcast, but how would you do things differently if you're prescribing HRT for a woman with POI compared to an older woman?
Well, firstly, the importance of HRT is different, because we're not just covering symptoms at this stage. What we're doing is replacing the hormone that woman should have. So it's a different mindset. We're very used to replacing thyroxine in women who are hypothyroid. And we should think of women who have POI as being hypoestrogenic. So we should be giving them estrogen to the average age of the menopause as replacement therapy. And then after that, they can decide whether they continue with it in the longer term or not. So it's a different mindset we have to have and that women have to have. But they can't make that choice unless they know the information, which is where Daisy Network is so helpful. One of the big risks, and we've talked about this in the other podcast, one of the big risks is about, you know, women's concern about breast cancer and the use of HRT. But it's different in these younger women because we're giving women the hormones they should have. We're not putting them at extra risk of breast cancer. So actually, we're just giving them the same risk as if they'd had their normal hormones. So it's a different conversation. We talked a little bit about whether they use testosterone or not. There's some good guidance on the British Menopause Society website about the use of testosterone if that's something you feel that you want to do. But that's not quite as easy as just dishing out more testosterone because there are some other requirements before that. And don't forget vaginal estrogens. So women who are younger are very likely to be more sexually active than women who go through menopause at a normal age. Not always, but you know, it tends to be. So don't let women have to tolerate dyspareunia because they have got dry vaginas. You know, make sure we add in vaginal estrogens if necessary.
We've touched briefly already on contraception. Do you have any particular tips for contraceptive options in women with POI?
You're right. The first thing is not to forget it, because we think, oh, we've told her she's menopausal, she doesn't necessarily need contraception. But actually, for 5 years after POI, people should be thinking about contraception because of that risk that they might still have an egg around. We know that women who are menopausal below the age of 50 and we've done their FSH levels, we know we should always tell them for 2 years after their last period or 2 years after we've told them they're menopausal, they should use contraception. But with this, with POI, we probably should do that for about 5 years routinely. Now, the other option she has in younger women is she could use, instead of using HRT, she could use combined oral contraception as her HRT. So if she is healthy enough, so BP's all right, BMI's all right, not having focal migraine, not smoking over the age of 35, you know, all the things we normally do when we're assessing use of combined oral contraception. So if she's okay with them, then her options are she could use combined oral contraception. She could use that up to the age of 50 as her HRT. Psychologically, that works well for her because she's more like her normal mates. She's not on HRT, she's on the pill, but also it covers that contraception that she may still be needing.
Now, we're all trying to do our best for these women, but of course, we're all working in what can be sometimes difficult situations with a lot of demand and not enough GPs. What do you think we could be doing better in primary care?
POI is very under-recognised by us, by the women, so we need to be thinking about it in women who particularly aren't having periods or using progesterone-only contraception and aren't having periods, but are having the symptoms at a younger age. So, you know, we just need to keep our mind open. But then we need to change this mindset. We need to be thinking, if you are under the age of 40 when you have your menopause, we need to be thinking about estrogen replacement as a long-term replacement therapy, not just as a symptom control. And so use it to the age of 51 and then decide how much after that she wants to take it.
Absolutely. It's really important to have a completely different way of thinking about it. So what would you consider to be the most important take-home messages on the subject?
Well, whenever we talk about women's health, we always finish everything by saying it's commoner than we think. But it is. It is commoner than we think. You know, 1 in 100 women under the age of 40 will have POI. And I think that is certainly commoner than most of us think. It's an important concern because it's got psychological impact and it's also got these longer term health risks that we need to be correcting. So we need to give estrogen replacement as a replacement therapy, not just symptom control. And as ever, it's about that holistic care, that what matters to you, that individualised approach that we need to take to allow and signpost women to the information that they need so that they can be involved in their decision making.
Thank you very much. That certainly helped me a lot and will be really useful the next time I'm doing a consultation with a patient with an early menopause. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening to this podcast. Please do join us for the other three podcasts in the series. For more information and resources, please visit the Women's Health Hub at rcgp.org.uk/women's-health. Thank you very much to Endometriosis UK for their support.